Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here on the DeFalco Files with the owner and creator of FSW, the Future Stars of Wrestling here in Las Vegas, Mr. Joe DeFalco. Joe, how's things going? Getting ready for the 27th here coming up.
Yeah, you know, it's rare that we actually had 3 full weeks off until, you know, the next show. So it's just trying to get things in place for the House of Glory event on August 17th. So, you know, we're prepared. We got a big card on the 27th. There's going to be 4 title matches, you know, and we've locked in September 22nd for Survival of the Fittest. Once again, at least I found out two weeks in advance that SummerSlam's August 3rd, and we had already planned to do a Future Shock. So what we're looking to do is about a 2:30 start for Future Shock, because it usually lasts about 90 minutes. And then we're going to have a SummerSlam watch party. So it's going to be all inclusive. So it's $20 front row, $15 for GA. The wrestlers get a $5 discount. So for $10, you know, if you get tickets from, you know, one of the wrestlers on the show, you're getting a live wrestling event and to watch SummerSlam. So, you know, maybe we'll have some food and drink also available.
Yeah. And, you know, with SummerSlam being an FSW main event and then also another FSW US title match, it's pretty big.
Yeah. So, you know, we did it a couple times when Chris Bay and, you know, we've been lucky. You know, when we did the watch party with Cross, he won the NXT title. We did a watch party with Bay. I believe he won the X Division title.
Right.
So, you know, maybe we strike gold again and the bloodline sweeps the board, becomes the tag champions and the heavyweight champion. And maybe LA Knight walks out as the U.S. champion. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. With the 27th coming up here, what do we got going on? I know we talked a little bit about it a week and a half ago, but what is locked down and set and ready to go?
Well, we have AJ Avin won at the Scars and Stripes, so he'll be challenging Damian Drake for the No Limits title. The Billionaire Boys Club, we haven't decided yet, but they will be defending the tag team titles. Maserati will defend the women's championship against Alice Blair, and just announced, you know, we were looking to do it at the at a big casino show. So we got a marquee main event, the Nevada State Championship. Jacob Austin Young and Cutthroat Cody Croft will finally handle things one-on-one, or as much as one-on-one can be, with all the outside forces.
Yeah.
And we're figuring out how to make sure that we can, you know, take care of everything and make that match, you know, come to fruition.
Well, I highly suggest not putting a bunch of black shirts on a bunch of young students, because that always seems to go bad.
Well, you know, they have to run security. So, unfortunately, that's part of the security thing. We have a mixed tag match, Dante King and Gypsy Mac. And we thought it was going to be against Danny Limelight, the heavyweight champion. But he messaged me to say that he has 2 hand-picked opponents for Gypsy Mac and Dante King. I don't know if it's a audition for Limelight Enterprises. You know, maybe it's an audition to carry his bags and pick him up at the airport and things like that. But we're hoping to find out this week who Gypsy Mac and Dante King will be wrestling. We have Judah Matthew, who's been with us now back a couple months from the anniversary show, and he's going to go one-on-one Jimmy Jack. So Jimmy Jack back from back from his cruise to the Easter Islands. I don't know if he picked up any hocus pocus while he was there, but, you know, he needs to offset Judah Matthews' hocus pocus.
Yeah, that's actually a very intriguing matchup. We'll talk about two guys. That'd be a nice tag team right there, too.
And then we have a six-man tag that will feature Fox Valentine, who his partner AJ is in a singles match, along with the young prodigy Bodie and Matt Vandegrift. And they will be taking on the team of Jordan Oasis, Damian Desire, and finalizing who the final participant in that one will be. So that's going to be an extremely exciting, you know, high risk kind of matchup. So,
we going to find out anytime soon what Jordan's got in his backpack? Is that still a mystery trying to be solved?
I do not know. I saw him. He was at the pre-show match where he was victorious at the anniversary, and he did have the backpack with him. So, the longest running mystery in FSW history.
Yeah,
and that rhyme too. Did you notice that?
Yeah. Could the backpack be the third partner?
It could be. Maybe he has the partner hiding in the backpack. Maybe Hornswoggle's going to be their final partner.
It's like when Al Snow used to use head in tag team matches.
Hey, it worked.
Matt Vandegrift gets pinned by a backpack.
There you go. I saw Vandegrift. He's going to be back August 3rd in AAA.
Yeah.
So his star is really picking up. You know, he's got all the New Japan stuff, and now he'll be back in AAA. Unless it's a misprint because he was announced as Vandegrift.
Yeah.
You know, so he can go as the crime dog, Vandegrift.
Yeah. Mick Vandegrift. Yeah. wear that trench coat. And I think you just got a new character there, Joe. And it could be like a Mick Foley type thing where he can do a couple different characters for you.
It's funny, though. You know, usually if somebody's name's misspelled, they're going to go crazy on Facebook. If we did that, AAA did it. And all the response I saw was, you know, maybe one day they'll get my name right. It was like, yeah, making sure not to take anything to ruffle Conan's feathers.
No, and all of a sudden, you know that. That's what's going to happen. He's going to take off under that misprint name, and that's going to be his name for the rest of his career. Well, and that's it. He's got to go with it.
Well, if he's wrestling in Mexico, he's hoping that somebody chants Vandegrift. It's close. You know, if you spell it out, it's not close. But if you say it, Vandegrift, you know, a lot of people use those hard R's when it comes to saying a name wrong.
Oh, man. And then you talked a little bit, House of Glory. How's that starting to come along? Because we're like a month out, just under a month out.
Yeah. It's amazing that, you know, 4 weeks flew to, you know, oh, we got plenty of time. It's 2 months away. And now it's like, oh, shit. Like we got on a call last week and, you know, we're ready to announce it. So by the time this airs, but the main event will be the founder of House of Glory, Amazing Red, going one-on-one with Chris Bay.
Yeah. That's definitely, and I don't, they haven't wrestled, have they? I don't think they've.
They have not wrestled. And also, we're working on a couple things, but it looks like we're going to do a title versus title match, and Santana will take on Danny Limelight in a title versus title match. So, you know, we're looking to add some more names. I know their tag team, the main event's going to be there. We haven't announced Maserati, but she will be there.
Sure.
And, you know, we're trying to, you know, fill things up. You know, we want the name values, of course. Hammerstone's not available, but hopefully we can lock in Kenny King.
Sure.
And, you know, I specifically put out to them that I want Gringo Loco on the show. So let's get it done. You know, what it's got to take. You know, I know we're working in the budgets and the flights and all this other stuff, but Gringo Loco, he brings the GCW crowd with him. And he also brings the probable best match of the night with him. So, you know, and that's saying a lot when you got Chris Bay versus Amazing Red. So, you know, have Gringo Loco on top of the card along with Santana and Limelight and a Kenny King and their tag team, the main event, who's really, really good. You know, we have a tough choice to make on who we're going to put in as a tag team in there.
Yeah.
You know. I'm looking for matchups.
Right.
So that doesn't eliminate certain teams or make me, you know, everything isn't going to be like every champion's going to be on the show. That's not how it's going to work. We're trying to get, you know, as much name recognition as possible mixed in with let's get the best matches, because we have a high ceiling. You know, people remember FSW versus GCW twice, and with House of Glory, they're prominent on the East Coast. GCW is prominent in the whole United States. So we need people to be thinking, hey, this is a big deal. This is, you know, East Coast, West Coast. This is, you know, matchup between two top companies from their areas, you know, coming to Vegas, and they're going to, you know, part of what we're talking about, trying to make FSW versus the world. You know, I really like that concept. Right. And, you know, this is the first one. You know, I've even talked with Brett at GCW. You know, maybe we can get that Matt Hardy appearance again if, you know, I saw he signed on a multiple show deal. Right. So we got to make that first one knock it out of the park. And, you know, a Hammerstone would have been huge on that show. You know, that, you know, those are the type of shows right now that Hammerstone is, you know, the first call that's being made. And unfortunately we went back and forth. I think I even said on the podcast like 10 different times, and I'm like, hey, we're probably going to do the 10th or the 11th. And then all of a sudden it became something else. And then we were going into September, and then we were going backwards. And then it just turned out the 17th worked. And then Hammerstone was like, ah, man, I held the 9th, 10th and 11th. But I ended up getting booked somewhere, which we know is for a hell of a lot more money.
Right.
So, you know, I can't be like, hey, do me a favor and turn it down. And he's a professional. He took the booking. I gave him a date to hold. I was taking the shot. It would be one of those 3 days. And unfortunately, it didn't work out. But the great thing is we have so much more talent. You know, guys that may not even have that name recognition, but former heavyweight champion Shogun, Vandegrift, he's working AAA. He's working New Japan Strong, Jacob Austin Young, Gregory Sharp. Unfortunately, Gregory Sharp was unavailable that day. And that shows the depth of the roster that we can not have Hammerstone and Gregory Sharp on that show. And possibly Jacob Austin Young, because he's got some big things he's working on. And, you know, we still have a stacked roster of guys who are like, oh, hey, what's up with the, you know, House of Glory show? And I'm like, don't get your hopes up. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be honest. Some of those guys that have, you know, steadily risen the ranks, you know, unless 8 other people, you know, drop out, which I highly doubt, it becomes difficult.
Right. Yeah. No, and it makes sense. And, you know, there are guys who would kill for that match against the Gringo Loco, right? So, you know, and you're talking about guys who would already be considered because of longevity, because of, you know, time put in.
You know, we had a match last year, FSW GCW, and Many people considered it the best match of the year inside the FSW arena. Well, you had Vandergrift, Damian Drake, and Bodie.
Bodie, yeah.
So, you know, one of those three guys will make the other two disappointed that if we did have Gringo Loco and they didn't make it. You know, everybody's got their upside. Right. Hey, why should Bodie get the match? Hey, right. It's a great spotlight for a kid who just turned 17 years old and wrestling Gringo Loco. Hey, Damian Drake's the No Limits champion now. He's back on a roll. Perfect. Hey, Matt Vandergrift. He's going to AAA. He's doing New Japan, taking on a guy who's been doing some AEW. So all three of those guys are awesome. Plus, I've also pitched the idea in my head and mentioned it to people that, hey, recreate the six-man, and maybe it's Gringo Loco and the main event against that combination. So, you know, sky is the limit, you know, when it comes to that, you know, because the key is getting the Amazing Red and getting Santana and doing the meet and greet and getting people involved. We're doing an Amazing Red seminar, and one part of the seminar will be, if you're not on the show, you're competing for a spot in the scramble match.
Nice.
Yeah. So it doesn't have to be an FSW guy. So, you know, I made mention to the Arizona crew, and I saw, you know, a response from EJ Sparks and Thugnificent. And they were like, hey, they might be interested in the seminar. Well, they also asked about the match. And I'm like, well, there's a lot of tag teams to choose from. You know, they're an exciting tag team, no doubt about it. So, but you also got the tag champions. You got the MK Army.
Yeah.
You got Sky High, the former champions.
Yeah.
Marquee Show. We could bring in Royce and Jarrell.
Yep.
You know, they're multi-time, you know, some of the longest reigning tag team champions. And having those guys in the back pocket that maybe they're not going to be regulars, but that's FSW guys. They're FSW tried and true. So you want to make sure you're taking care of the people that have been around and been there, done that. And I got a couple guys that, you know, they've been somewhat around. Oh, I really love a match. Yeah, so with 35 other guys, bro.
Right.
It's like you're no different. You know, there's a pecking order. And the pecking order isn't how long you've been there. The pecking order is how much you've done and how long you've been there. So if you've done a lot, and that guy's done a lot, and he's been doing it for me for 10 years, he's got the edge over you.
Yeah.
But it's also, you want to make sure you're having the right match also.
Right. Which is,
you know, years ago, I at the Mecca, I think I made a big mistake. You know, we had Pentagon coming in. We had already set Phoenix up to wrestle Chris Bay and Douglas James.
Right.
So Cross was booked in Arizona. And he was like, bro, if you get me Pentagon, it's on my list. You know, that's a match that I'll cancel, man. I'll be there for you. And I'm like, you know, Kev, you know, I love you, but that's not the match that I'm really looking for. And we brought in Matt Sydal. And I felt, hey, I remember Matt Sydal and Apollo Crews, UHA Nation, at my IWF show. Man, that was one of the best matches I've ever seen. Yeah. But over the years, Matt Sydal's knees really deteriorated horribly. And he was not that high flyer guy anymore. Yeah. And he was basically working the one eye gimmick from TNA.
Right.
And I put that match together. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people say, hey, that was a really good match. Maybe, but it wasn't the match that I was looking for.
Right.
And as good as that match may have been, having one of our greatest champions and the person who did he did more things for FSW than possibly anybody. That's the one, if you say, hey, you have a regret, you know, yeah, that would have been not having Cross in that match, because I thought it was going to be the blow away best match on the show with Pentagon and Sydal, but it became a different style. So now for a lot of people, again, I'm not saying it was a bad match. I'm just saying the way I was positioning the show, the match that I thought was going to be the standout for the craziness.
Right.
Which Kevin wouldn't have brought to the match, but it would have been good in a different way. And after it was all said and done, it was like, well, I would have saved some money. And I probably would have had more tickets sold because Kevin was on the show.
Right.
And it would have ingratiated him with me even more. So, you know, that was the one thing that I thought was going to work. And it didn't. So that's why it's like with GCW, FSW, it was, hey, man, you know, Hammerstone and Janela. You know, I felt it was two guys that were mainstays. They represented the company at the time with Kevin and LA Knight gone. Hammerstone was the guy flying the banner.
Right.
And Janela has always flown the banner, even when he was in AEW. He was GCW, tried and true. And we had history with Janela. We brought him in at the Mecca with Jushin Liger, and Janela and Teddy Hart had the best match on the show. Yep. So I always tell Janela, credit me for you, which maybe doesn't mean as much anymore, but that was the first time he met Chris Jericho because Fozzy was doing the concert. Disco got Jericho and me hooked up, and Jericho did the opener, basically, for the FSW Mecca show, and talked about the show and put it over, and we sent people to the Fozzy show, and it worked out great. And Jericho told me, he was like, hey, let people know, you know, your workers, of course, you know, get in for free, come and see. I told Janela, he's a rocker. He went there, he met Jericho. Within like a month, he was on the podcast. And then when AEW came out, I'm like, yeah, you're welcome, Joey. How about you give me a little discount, you know? So those are the matches you wanted to have. Chris Bay versus Lio Rush at the time. It kind of fell through. Right. Lio Rush, you know, he ended up finally getting that match, Chris, that he'd been wanting for a long time. And it's those marquee matchups. And, you know, that's what we're trying to do for House of Glory because they don't have the same reach. You know, right. They'll do a show in New York and it'll be packed. But to come out here, it's a different fan base. So now we have to make people excited about it. So hopefully that's what we're going to be able to do.
Right. And I think that, you know, as it's very interesting because, you know, the fan base here is a fairly smart fan base. I think as names get announced, as kind of the matchups take, you know, shape, I think that will create, you know, a little bit more of a buzz, and both companies obviously, through, you know, Fight TV, will be able to benefit by having, you know, certain fan bases, check out. I mean, the concept of FSW versus the world in that theory is a great idea, because that will boost a lot of your exposure for a lot of these guys, even if they want to, you know, start venturing out and taking bookings on the East Coast. It's the way to do it, is get the exposure.
Yeah, you know, and that's the concept of the idea. It's like, as I always said, yeah, House of Glory could come out, they could rent the arena and run a show, use one or two of our guys and hope it draws, and pay far less than doing it at the Silverton or any other venue in town. Or I don't worry about getting money in exchange. We are getting that House of Glory fan base to now watch an FSW show.
Yep.
And now they'll see people that they may not know. Yeah, they probably know Chris Bay, TNA, but do they know Shogun? Do they know Vandegrift or Young Bodhi? Or Maserati, who's getting out there way out. I didn't even know. Remy just told me she worked AAA this weekend. So yeah. Maz is really, you know, doing fantastic things. Viva Van was our champion for over a year. She's all over AAA. Yeah. So when you think of FSW, more and more you have to think, wow, the talent that's come out of there, because nobody sits there and is like, yeah, but LA Knight didn't train there. Yeah, but Hammerstone didn't train there. It's like, yeah, but when nobody heard of those guys, they were wrestling for us. So right. We, Solo Sikoa, well, yeah, he trained with us. Cross, Chris Bay moved from Virginia. Jacob Austin Young moved from Arizona. Yeah. Matt Vandegrift came from California to be part of FSW. Maserati trained with us. He was just a valet. Look at her now.
Yeah.
You know, so we need the world to see what we can do. Because, you know, the saying always goes, you know, about how when you see something all the time, it just kind of goes past you. I say that about our fans because they've seen so many of our guys. It's like, oh, yeah, we'll catch the next show. Oh, yeah, we'll catch the next show. Because they've seen those wrestlers 30 times, 70 times, 150 times. Over 15 years, running 2-3 shows a month, you're talking 30, 40 shows. We've run 500-600 shows maybe.
Right.
And you know our main guys, up until last year, Hammerstone was on 75% of them. So you could have seen Hammerstone 200 times already. So it's really got to be something special to be like, oh, I can't miss this. You know, we see it. Can't miss the anniversary show. Oh, can't miss No Escape. But hey, you know what? We can miss Collision Course. Oh, we can miss, you know, the Scars and Stripes because I'll come to 27 instead of the 6th. Oh, I'll come to 6th, but I can't make the 27th. Hey, another thing. My birthday is the 26th. You got to come out and, you know, buy a ticket. That'll be my birthday present. Buy a ticket for the show on the 27th. You know, we could rename it the Joe DeFalco Birthday Bash. You know, we used to do that at the nightclubs. It was, you know, it was DJ Joe's Birthday Bash.
Well, hey, now I think you just came up with the concept. I think what you do on the 27th is you have the show and then an after party for your birthday where you come out of retirement and you DJ the party.
Yeah, I don't know how to. It's weird. I don't know how to mix on a computer, you know. Right. Oh, wait. You do it yourself. You hit a button and it mixes. A lot of talent involved in that.
Hey, listen. If you can get some of the old school women who used to work there when you worked there to come dance.
Yeah, my buddy has a club like that. It's called Boogie Nights, featuring the 70s and 80s. So everybody that's, you know, 64 years old. That's why I never understood the concept. It's like, Dave, it's like, okay, I got it. You started it 15, 20 years ago, 70s and 80s. You know, those are 40-something people. Now there's 60-something people. It's like, shouldn't you be like an 80s and 90s dance club? That way, you know, the late 90s, like the freestyle acts that I used to play, it was basically all the Puerto Ricans from New York City and maybe, you know, Stevie B from Florida. Man. And like those late 90s into 2000, well, you had 20 years. There were, you know, they were 25 then. So now they're 45.
Right.
But it's like, oh, yeah, I got the cowboy from the Village People. And it's like, bro, that dude's like 75 years old. It's not even the Village People. It's the Village person because all the people died.
It's not even the Village. It's the old folks person. Shit. When you look at the logistics of putting together this House of Glory show too, does that change, you know, capacity kind of trying to potentially hopefully get a crowd like you have gotten for the GCW shows?
Well, you know, that's the game plan. You know, we're offering second row seats, first row seats. Now we have a dozen second row seats in front of the bleachers because that always was the room to do it. But obviously, we're not going to turn down money on an expensive show. So the walls, if we move the first row up and don't use guardrails, we have access to 36, 40 more seats. So the idea is to make it like the FSW, GCW, the Natural Born Killers, the first one that we had, that we're maximizing the capacity. Like when we set it up now, we set it up for 180 to 200 tops.
Sure.
But again, we'll see how the tickets are moving, but we know we can put in 275, 8 people, move the commentary table, make, you know, the ramp way as many seats as possible. We set it up now for like 6 seats. Well, logistically, we could probably set it up on, you know, 6 and 5 of 11 and 16. We can add 20 more seats there. So we can add the 60 more seats, 70 more seats, because now you also have with the commentary table, we got to figure out commentary, but we can also use a small little table. And hopefully that becomes the problem. Yeah. You know, as again, it wasn't like we were turning down 150 people for GCW. That was kind of where we were at, that 260 to 280 range.
Right.
Now, if we do 200 for this show, school show, but, you know, I do have a lot of people like, hey, I need to, you know, I get paid next week. Can you hold the 3 tickets? Which I always do with our regular fan base. So we've sold some tickets online. You know, everyone but one ticket was front row. So instead of 55 front row, we'll probably try our best, because now remember, the second row becomes the first row. So when right. This is the first row, there's more room because now you're 5 feet closer. So we're hoping 65 to 70 front row. But that's going to be booked and jam-packed. You know, thankfully, it's toward the end of August. So, you know, being hot maybe is 100, 102 instead of 116. And right. Believe me, that 15 degrees is going to be a big difference. So, right. And again, if it's 90 now, maybe there's more room because the fans and the swamp coolers are kind of taken out. You know, maybe the merch area goes instead of back in the room where it's been now, back outside the entryway, you right. know, but we have plenty of time, and we, you know, not plenty of time, but we'll know. It isn't going to be like, oh, we sold 120 tickets. We should sell 120 at the door to make 240. Well, that's not going to happen. Right. So, you know, the push is coming. You know, this week we're going to be putting out the matches, and, you know, we're going to go from there.
Put on Ice Williams on the show, put on the Mariachis on the show, and pick up an extra 50 to 100 tickets that way.
Mariachis, no. There's going to be one tag match. They're not jumping over 7 tag teams. Appreciate it, but, you know, yeah, you know, that's what Future Shock is for. They've right. gotten on high octanes. When they get good enough, 1,000%. But, yeah. You know, there's no guarantees. You know, I've seen him sell 6 tickets, and I've seen him sell 45 tickets. Yeah. So this is a special show that everybody's ears are like, oh, does Joe need me for that show? You know, everybody's coming out of the woodwork. You know, I got Jared Diaz in New York. And I got Richard King in Florida. Like, hey, I was looking to come out, you know. And it's like, you know, maybe a scramble spot. But, you know, I'm not going to give you a scramble spot and not put a Jacob Austin Young on my show.
I mean, those guys are East Coasters. Couldn't they hook up with the houses?
Well, Jared Diaz recently worked the All Puerto Rican show for House of Glory.
Nice.
So he does have, you know, an affiliation there. But again, House of Glory, you know, we're looking at 7 matches. Okay. One women's yeah. match, one tag match, So one scramble match. So that's seven matches. The one tag team is one extra person. So there's eight people. Okay. Scramble match, if we do five, six, that's three more. So that's 11 people total from their company that they got to bring in. Okay. We could do a four-way scramble and a six-man tag, like I was saying with the Gringo Loco main event thing.
Right.
But it's still around 10 or 11 people. So, and one spot is being taken by somebody who is in the seminar. You know, right. Nobody's coming from House of Glory to be in a seminar to hope to be on the show. They're going to bring out that person already who's going to be in there.
Right.
So that would probably come out of our end, which is fine. Because it could be one of our students. Because I would say 75, 80% of the people in the seminar are going to be FSW students. And then there's going to be some tricklers, you know, that come in. So it's harder for Richard King than Jared Diaz, because Jared Diaz did work for him. And Jared Diaz gets himself out here, well, then I can't see him not being used, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Really talented. It's great, you know? Yeah. And he's taken advantage of those situations when SummerSlam was here. And when we did the, you know, the Future Legends tournament, you know, he made sure he got himself out here.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's, I mean, he's as solid as it comes for his experience. And
we're one Puerto Rican short since Jay Vidal's not around, you know. So, you know, I always told Jay Vidal, you know, Jared Diaz could take your spot. You know, Danny Limelight needs, you know, somebody to run with.
Yeah, you should just go all out and just do fake Jay Vidal, like they did with fake Diesel, and just have
Ray Vidal.
Yeah,
his brother Ray.
REI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, that's true too. Now we're sure that Danny is going to actually wrestle that match and not send in a someone to.
He wanted that match though.
So. Okay.
Because I told him, I'm like, well, we got a couple options, and then when Hammerstone dropped out, it kind of made him the forefront.
Yeah, yeah, which is great. You know, it's like. Again, the think back 5-6 years, and to think of this being the problems that you have now is literally having to play chess pieces with all these incredible pieces. It, you know, it's amazing. Think about where you were at the pandemic and that potentiality where things could have gone different because, you know, maybe people didn't want to train, didn't come back, didn't do this, didn't do that. Fans stayed away, etc. The train wreck that could have been to where you are now with all this talent and all this young talent who's hungry as well. It's ridiculous, man.
Well, you know, it's always the good, the bad, and the ugly, as I say, you know, the pandemic financially ended up paying off for me personally. Sure. You know, between me and my wife, the pandemic money that came in, tremendous. But on the opposite side, we had just come off the anniversary show and No Escape, and we were packing houses. You know, we were at the pinnacle. We ran the Mecca the day before everything closed down. And despite all that, we still had a packed house. And the pandemic really stopped everything in its tracks. Yeah. And then when everything came back, a lot of other people had pandemic money. And they took that pandemic money. And now all of a sudden there was a birth of, you know, 1,000 new wrestling promotions in the United States. Right. And now it's the watered down era. You know, you see it on Facebook, and it was like, you know, talking about untrained wrestlers and getting on shows. And it's like, which is mind boggling to me, because the only people I use are my guys or somebody from Arizona who trains with PCW and Dom.
Yep.
Or Jacob Austin Young telling me about, you know, Thugnificent. Or Santino Brothers having new talent. So all those guys are trained. And I was trying to make the point, and it was like, are they untrained wrestlers that people are using everywhere? Or are they wrestlers that have some training at schools and they're still trying to train, but because there's 50 shows in SoCal, all of a sudden becomes like this. So now it's like, okay, well, all these guys are taken. Now we're starting to pick from guys who not had a lot of matches. But, hey, they did train at Santino's. Oh, they did train. We have our guys at FSW who take spots. And it's like, man, you're not really fucking ready for that.
Right.
But they're not going to turn it down. It ain't because it's the money. They're probably getting $20.
Right.
You know, but they want to make their debut. And it's like, you can only encourage them, because then you got, oh, they don't want you wrestling anywhere else. It's like, you know, we know when you're ready.
Right.
It's future shock. And that's how 95% of the people get booked for the first time. You know? Yep. You know, Chris Bay was on Future Shock. Cross was on Future Shock.
Yep.
You know, Vandegrift was on Future Shock. All those guys, when we started those student showcases, because they were students.
Yep.
And Suavecitos, you know, they're killing it on the way in California. They were on Future Shock. They were two guys that weren't even a tag team that got put together on Future Shock. Yeah. And they didn't get booked anywhere else. That was their bookings. And now all of a sudden they had some footage. Hey, this is us. We got trained at FSW. We got trained by Kenny King. We got trained by D'Lo Brown. And we got trained by Sin Bodhi. Oh, shit. Yeah. Really? Wow. So now we need a guy. Or we're doing a show in California. Not us, but hey, two of our guys are going to California for a booking. Why don't you come in the car? Oh, yeah, well, we got it. Just like I do. That's how Class got on a show. That's how Jordan Cruz got on a show. Hey, we're doing a Future Shock. Oh, you know, Dom and Hammerstone are like, hey, check out this guy, Class. That's how we used him.
Yeah.
I didn't look at any footage and be like, I don't have time to look at all that stuff. I need recommendations. Right. And, you know, a bad company doesn't take recommendations, just take somebody at their word. I got trained, blah, 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 blah. I like to be on the show. Oh, I work cheap. Oh, I work for free. Oh, okay. And then they get booked.
Right.
And that's why there's so much shit going on.
Yeah. And reminiscent of, you know, again, the early 2000s when wrestling had a boom. That was the same thing. And UPW was...
If I wait 2 or 3 months, if I wait like more than a month to be like, hey, I need you September 12th, I'm telling people now for Survival of the Fittest, September 22nd, and we're a priority. And I try to tell other guys. It was the same thing with Marquez when he was running Hollywood. And 2 weeks before our show, he decided he was going to run an event that day. And Willie Mack and LA Knight and Brian Cage. And all those guys were like, hey, sorry, Joe, that's our priority. You know, Dave's running a show. You know, we got to do it. I had to become understanding of that. As I try to tell our guys, like, if you're a main guy, I don't give a fuck. Do you want? Here's your choice. Don't be a main guy. Because I can't put you in a spot. If you're working some show that's paying you $50 extra, that's going to have 80 people there. When we're trying to set up for a casino show. That you've gotten most of your notoriety from. And the younger guys, you got to explain it to. It's not that hard. Hey, right now I'm good for that date. But if FSW runs and they need me, that's my priority. Or Brett the Thread. Hey, Joe, somebody's looking to book me August 17th. Are we running a show that day? And then I'll respond, I'm not sure. Depending on every 2 weeks, odds are we're not. Then it would be like, hey, it's possible, but you're good because it was nothing major. And I'm willing to, you know, move that around. But right. If it's like, you know, Danny Limelight, hey, I'm looking at these 2 dates. Hey, I got Booker's show on the 15th. I could do the 22nd. Oh, okay. Hey, then I hit 3 other people up. Hey, are you good the 22nd? You good the 22nd? Okay. Now we're good the 22nd. If some people can't make it, I got it. But I've locked in the core champions, the core roster of what I'm looking for on that show.
Right.
And it's like, I get it. I'm giving you the freedom to do what you want. But if you can't be there for me, then don't expect me to be there for you.
Yeah.
Because now you're available, which I've gotten plenty of times. Oh, I'm good that day. Okay, well, I got nothing for you. Sorry. You know.
But my schedule changed, Joe.
Yeah. Hey, I people were like, hey, you know, sky high. I can't believe it took so long to get the tag belts. Well, you don't know the inner workings. There was months, 6-8 months earlier when we were doing the program with Xander and Ice Williams when he was the champion. Right. And because the faction were the champs, the idea was Xander needed some help. So the idea was I was going to put Sky High in there. They're like, well, we can't make this show. And I'm like, well, then I don't need you. So now we rechanged how we did things, and they got kind of pushed to the side because they weren't available for what I needed to do to make the puzzle pieces go together. And it wasn't a slight on them. It wasn't, oh, fuck these motherfuckers. It was, okay, I have to now take a different path.
Right.
And if you're not able to make that path, sometimes you can walk right back into something because that's what I need. Right. And sometimes it takes time. We have other things on the agenda that we're trying to get to. You know, it's like we kind of got the card set for the 27th. The only thing that's left is one spot in reality in the six-man tag. Now, since we're probably doing 7 matches, I'm pretty much 100%, yeah, 100% that we're going to do a pre-show match.
Sure.
Now, I had to make a post. Like some of our Future Shock guys, especially when we have Future Shock the week after, and it's like, hey, motherfuckers, you guys going to train? Like, I'm there 4 days out of the 5, and I don't see a lot of you. You know, I'm not talking about main roster guys that are always on shows. I'm talking to guys that sometimes they're never on a show anywhere for an entire month unless they're on a Future Shock.
Right.
So that means you're at a level of intermediate, not advanced, not beginner, you still need to be around to get your reps in, to get your work in, to look good. Because, you know, when Adrian Rain and Phil Godfrey are there and I see them every day, it makes me think they're there every day because I see them every day. Right. When I get there early and Vandegrift's rolling around and there's Adrian Rain and there's, you know, Fox and there's AJ and there's the mariachis. It was like, I didn't see the mariachis for a while. Hey, bro, what's up? Normally they were there a lot. And one got sent off to work in California because I know he has to leave certain times. You know, wife had a kid recently. And the other one, I guess, got banged up a little bit. But if you don't tell me, all I know is you're not around. Like, why aren't you around? You know, you don't have to inform me. You pay your dues. Now you're a little behind. Oh, okay. And now you're a little behind and I haven't seen you. So when you find two guys who are usually never behind and I always see, hey, what's going on? There's got to be some issue. But there's some that are going to fly under the radar because you don't see them that much and they're around.
Yeah.
So it's like, respectfully, and Adrian Rain and if Phil Godfrey are definitely going to be on Future Shock. There's like no question. Now, when you get the other ones, hey, you know, Raw Reese, Oliver Kanaday, you know, are you around? What's going on? Got ideas? You know, and now it's filling in the card because I'm also getting the younger guys, the Flyboy Freddies and Enrique Calderones from Arizona who drive up hoping to get a spot, you know, and the California crew or who's going to come with somebody from Cali trying to get a spot. You know, you want to, you know, you want to put new talent, but Future Shock, you want to make sure your best up-and-coming young talent is getting on the shows because, A, they're the ones that are going to hopefully sell the tickets, and, B, that's supposedly the future of your company.
Right. No, that's and that's how Bassman did it at UPW. Those the students.
Yeah, I remember one-of-a-kind Dylan Klein, John Elliott, you know, when him and his brother went down there. I actually talked to him because he was looking one of his guys maybe to possibly rent out the facility. Nice. You know, I remember when he was the 18-year-old kid, he was the heartbreaker. Yeah. And I was like, the heartbreaker, he's got zits all over his face. He's 18 years old. What the fuck? Yeah. You know, that was back in the Buffalo gym days. So this was like 96, 97.
Yeah.
You know, and then it was like they bulked up. They got big. Then they became, you know, they both got signed to the early days of NXT. They, you know, we even had them at a Silver Nugget show. One of a kind, Dylan Klein.
Yeah, it's, you know.
And I remember they, after nothing was really happening in Vegas, and I remember they went to UPW. And they were like, man, they were so excited. They finally got on a student show.
Yeah.
And at that time, I'm like, what the fuck is that? You guys are getting to be in fucking wrestle in front of 23 people? But that was the way to get the younger, you know, I had no knowledge. I wasn't running shows. You know, we were part of the stuff because I knew them with Buffalo Jim and when I was doing my radio show. And I was just starting because I was, you know, at that time, probably Rush had started his school that I got involved with and helped out.
Right.
But I didn't understand the business in any way. And it was like, oh, yeah, student showcase. That's a great way for, because UPW was always looked at as this big deal. Like, oh, shit, they're bringing in fucking Rob Van Dam and fucking Hall and Nash and X-Pac and all this shit. And the Hardys. It was like, man, nobody saw that shit until they got, like, all of a sudden Cena and the people came out of there.
Yeah. And again, the same, you know, I think the same atmosphere in terms of what you create when you are talking about those names, people. I mean, yeah, the reason that they had those people were because it was considered a developmental territory for the West Coast, for WWE. They had a deal in place. Okay.
Yeah. But at the same time. But I look at them, that was kind of like what we patterned ourselves. Like, they had the same crew. They had Navajo, Gallo, Nykerk, and Knox.
Exactly.
That was those guys. And then they had Modest in that crew.
Yep.
They had the NorCal crew, the Arizona crew. It was basically what we were doing.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing. The thing is that there, between that, Santino's, and what Dom's doing now in Phoenix, like, that's like that's the most reminiscent of, if you look at how a structure, these are the promotions that get it, you know, classes, student shows, and shows that are, you know, either set things up or bigger shows. You're running an organization as opposed to the local wrestling company at the VFW hall who, you know, Bob Smith has been your champion for 26 straight months and everyone goes crazy because it's the local stuff. And, you know, sometimes you get lost. And then, you know, Marquez did something totally different and that is just create a TV show. You know, it's like, and that's all these guys who were getting all the reps at, you know, these different places. They've just put them on TV. there you go. I mean, that's your West Coast wrestling for the last 20 years. You know, so.
Yeah, now it's 20-fold because all of a sudden you can go on there. And again, that's why prices have, you know, changed in situations, because it's like, yeah, you guys, the under talent is getting booked a lot more because there's a lot more shows. And now all these companies are using two or three guys worth of shit that have some name value on that scene, the SoCal scene, the West Coast scene, and then they sprinkle it in with a lot of garbage.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, at least, you know, some of that garbage is like, how do you even find an untrained wrestler? Like, how are you a wrestler? Oh, where'd you train? Oh, in my backyard. Oh, okay. I'll book you on the show. Like I don't understand how that works. I get guys who come in the first day. You know, we have a kid. He just came in. Oh, yeah, me and my buddy, and we're talking about being a tag team. We're talking about this. And it's like, oh, is he signing up too? Oh, no, you know, I figured he'd come out as my manager. Yeah, bro. Okay, let me smarten you up. That's not how it fucking works. Your boy's not going to be your manager, you know, unless you're Logan Paul or something and you bring in 10 million followers and he's part of your crew. He actually would have to train. He would not take a spot over somebody who's training to be there. But they're young, and he's like, oh, I have this idea. And I'm like, okay, step back. You haven't even started your first day of training. Everybody, when they're 8 years old, 12 years old, 15 years old, has this great idea about their character and what they're going to be. When you're 25 years old, that character may not be as good anymore. Worry about getting that first match, and worry about getting close enough. Once you get close enough to where people are saying, hey, man, you're looking pretty good, might be able to get you a match at Future Shock, then you could start developing things and getting gear. You don't buy gear now for, hey, I'm going to be the prototype. Well, you're 5'6" and you're 138 pounds. The prototype of what? You know, maybe you were 5'8 at 11 years old and you never grew anymore.
Right.
You were the biggest guy on the block. You were choke slamming all your friends, you know, in the backyard. And now at 17, you're the little guy who everybody wants to practice on.
You're referring to Danny again, aren't you? You're bringing up those suavecitos a lot.
What are you doing? Not at all. See? putting shit in my head. What are you talking about? The mariachis have obviously eclipsed the suavecitos best Mexican tag team in FSW and in Vegas. So, just saying.
I think the suavecitos would ask, where is their banner on the wall? So,
yeah, they got to get further up than Chris Hero for that.
All right. So 27th, start time, 7 PM,
7 PM. Yes. And then the August 3rd Future Shock, we're looking at, 2:30 ish.
Okay. And, I'm assuming, anyone who drives in from Arizona to potentially get on Future Shock can stay around and watch SummerSlam afterwards.
They can, but I will probably charge them. You know, if they want to partake in the food and drink, that's going to be at least, you know, $5 or $10.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Final thoughts as we wrap up this week. Anything stick out to you? I know Chris Bay just won another championship last night with his tag partner.
You know, I wish you would have told me. I could have made a few bucks on Bet Online. But I could have made money on Nemeth. The old Dolph, I didn't check the odds, but I think he was like, you know, the problem is with TNA, I think the maximum bet is $25. But when you're 5 or 6 to 1, I would have won $150 on $25.
Sure.
And then you get the multiple accounts because I got one under the wife's name. I got one under the kid's name. You know, all of a sudden I could have picked up $450 if I knew Because I almost, it was funny, because I looked like 2-3 days ago, and Joe Hendry was +10 to 1. And I'm like, well, $25 is $250. Like, there's a good shot that he could win.
Right.
And it was like, they had him pin Moose. They were like, hey, I liked what FSW did. They had Sky High get pinned first.
Right.
So it would be guaranteed a new champ. So Chris Bay said, hey, Joe at FSW had this good idea. So Moose was very excited to know he was going to get taken out early. And Joe Hendry, but it was like they moved the belt. And also, like Mustafa Ali, they knew Mustafa Ali was a big, big underdog.
Yeah.
Like Bailey was a big favorite to win. PCO was a favorite to win. They only had like 5 matches. But the Bullet Club was +150. And I'm like, man. And this was just personal because Chris, I don't even think knows until like the day of anyway.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm just not fond of that tag team. I'm like, really? So they have, and TNA is notorious, especially with the tag titles, that if you could survive the pay-per-view and one taping, usually by the second taping, you're losing the belts. Because it becomes like 2 months of television that you've had the title. So if you go through the taping week and then the next show, you've held the title for like 5 months, yet you've only had 2 shows.
Right.
So they're always moving that title whenever they have a pay-per-view. So that's always the key to knowing when they do it. And if you look, they generally don't move the title at the taping, like on the second day or something, where everybody knows. Right. It's usually the pay-per-view or the first taping right after.
And it was Slammiversary too, which, you know, obviously we got, what, three title changes? So, I mean, you know, that was going to be a big...
Well, yeah, they unified those important belts with AJ Francis and...
And PCO.
PCO,
right. Yeah. So. Which is, you know...
It's like, okay, I guess... You know, it's another way to have a fourth or fifth belt. At least they're not like some company that has 27 of them.
And lets you defend belts from outside companies every week on your show.
Yeah. You know. Just
saying. Hey, Joe, I'm sure you could get an FSW title defended on that show.
You know, we've got to put bring back Cage and Toa Leona and make them tag champions, and then we'll see.
We should see. See if next time they're in town, see if I can get PCO to do a seminar. That would be fun. PCO teaching people how to wrestle still at 55.
Yeah, how to do cannonballs off the top rope on the concrete,
dude.
Crazy motherfucker, man.
He is. And one of the nicest
people. I remember him when he was feuding with Bret Hart.
Hell yeah, man.
And it would have been like, oh, this is the guy. And I was like, what? Like 20 years later. It was like, where the fuck did he go for 20 years? Guess he got tired of that job at Target. You know what I'm saying?
You know, that's the interesting thing when you actually get some of the life story from someone and understand what happens when you get so much so soon and you're not ready for it, and what you can do to then revitalize and reinvent yourself and come back into the business like that. It's crazy.
So are you saying fellow Canadian Rene Dupree has a shot still?
I would give anything to see Rene Dupree come back and do stuff like PCO is doing too.
I know he's got a really popular podcast, Rene Dupree.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the bigger one would be is whatever happened to, Phil LaFon and, that Canadian.
Yeah, I think they died. I know at least one of them died.
One of them died? Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah, LaFon and Furnace.
Furnace, that's right, Doug Furnace.
Yeah, big in Japan.
Yeah. Yeah, and
big in Canada. I remember they had a little ECW run too.
Yeah. Yeah. Debuted at that Survivor Series The Rock debuted at in 96 in New York.
And yeah, then, and look, nobody came out of that with anything good. That Rocky Maivia guy, what a fucking joke.
Yeah.
Garbage.
Tell you, WrestleMania 13, man. Him wrestling Rikishi as the Sultan. And boy, you would have thought that everyone in the Rosemont Horizon was like ready to just like go get their nacho. No one gave a fuck about that match. And here you have two Hall of Famers. Yeah. You know, it's like, who the fuck knew? You know, it's like, Jesus.
Who knew Rikishi? All he had to do was dance with two white guys.
Right?
That was it.
That's Hall very of Fame. Hall of Fame, right there. And also spawn, you know, potentially right now, three future Hall of Famers himself. So, you know.
Yeah, love Rikishi, but, you know, he couldn't get the best out of Solo. Had to come to FSW to get it done, brother.
Could you imagine if the Usos would have also, you know, they were.
I guess they came out of Booker T school.
I don't remember. I gotta look that one up.
I thought they said something about. I remember reading something recently about the Usos and Booker T, but I was like, they'd have been, you know, there would have to be way more hype about Booker T if he, like, maybe they stopped there or whatever.
Yeah, because I think because they've been in for over 10 years now. I think so. Booker, I don't think has had the school for 10. So. I thought they went to Florida, but I'd have to look that up. I thought they went to Florida Championship before.
Because weren't they West Coast guys because of Rikishi growing up?
They were, but I think he did exactly this. I don't think Kish had the school when they were coming up.
Well, they had it a long time because he used to have it with Gangrel.
Right. So that they might have trained out that way. Under Gangrel too, so interesting. But hey, if they would have came,
trying to look, but it keeps saying how the first USO centers were created. It's like no, not USO, Usos. Well, it says who trained the Usos? Trained since childhood by their father, Rikishi. The team debuted in WWE's then developmental territory, Florida Championship Wrestling.
Yeah, so they definitely got their polishing at Florida Championship, which would make sense because Dusty was running it then before it became NXT. So, but yeah, could you imagine if you would have trained the Usos, they might have been something. Now they're just
they might have been. They'd probably still be together.
Yeah.
You know, we,
or maybe it would have taken them less time to, you know, break off.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah, not have to be a tag team.
Because they trained at FCW, so they had 100 other people that they also had, you know, in there. At FSW, they would have been, you know, top guys.
Yeah.
You know, look at Solo. Look at Cepho. Yeah.
Exactly.
He couldn't even beat He could barely beat Spider Warrior when he first started.
How is the old Spider Warrior doing?
No idea.
Really? Oh, man, that's a shame.
I haven't heard of Pete.
Yeah. Well.
Ask the faction. They would know. He went to their birthday party, I heard.
Ah. Oh, there we go. Wait, are they just having one birthday as a whole now, the faction?
I think it might have been ISIS. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Well, I wasn't invited, maybe. So I don't.
Well, wait. They got beef going on, though. How could they all be in the same place at the same time? That makes no sense as wrestling.
This was last year. All right.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, they're Kenny King is bringing the faction together on the 27th.
Yep, which is going to be – so he's either going to take care of business or he's going to sell them a car, correct?
Maybe.
Oh, man. Now he's a Hall of Famer. He can basically do what he wants, right, Joe? Is it official?
I sent him a text message today. I'm announcing it here. I heard rumors. Lashley's contract's expired. They're talking about Lashley, MVP, the Hurt Business, Shelton Benjamin.
Oh, that's right. You can get Shelton back in the fold.
It's that's been a while. Three. Who's the fourth? Free agent Kenny King, brother.
Yeah.
The new Hurt Business. Step up over Cedric Alexander. And I can't even remember the other Choo Choo never won a match that was in it. Wasn't there another guy?
Oh, didn't they? Wasn't Omos in it?
Yeah, he was in the other version.
He was in the other version. Yeah, who was that other dude?
Yeah, there was another guy, because I remember Shelton and Cedric Alexander teamed.
Right.
There was Lashley. I thought there was one other guy that was, you know, kind of the total jabron.
Yeah, I wonder if... Now I have to look that up.
Yeah, all I'm right. Looking at it's saying Lashley, Shelton Benjamin, and Cedric Alexander.
Huh. Then yeah, I guess that must have been it.
Homework for next week. You know, it's kind of like when the WWE broke up Legacy, and then they brought in Snuka Jr., Deuce, and one of the other Bloodline guys.
Deuce and Domino.
No, it wasn't Deuce and Domino. It was just Deuce as Snuka Jr.
Oh, as Snuka Jr., that's
right. They brought in the two Samoan Bloodline guys after they kicked out DiBiase and Rhodes.
Right.
And they didn't last long at all.
Right, that lasted all of like 2 weeks or whatever the fuck it was.
Yeah, it was Orton took them all out. Right. And I was always thinking, like, man, when they were doing the spot with Jericho and they had Superfly and the thing of like, man, I remember they did like a Piper's Pit type thing and they brought out Snuka again. And it was like, man, that would have been perfect for Snuka Jr. to jump out of the audience and it would at least put him in, like, people would have gave a shit.
Right.
Yeah. Because I think he was already been Deuce at the time.
Yeah, by that, yeah, because I think they had about a year run of that Deuce and Domino gimmick.
Yeah, I liked it.
It was, but they had at that point they had no. They were really not putting any emphasis on the tag teams at all.
No, there was good, and there was good promos with them, and I always remember Domino would come out and talk like Dice.
Yeah,
it was hilarious.
And then you had Cherry,
on the roller skates.
On the roller skates, it was like, yeah, that's freaking awesome.
You know, but they should have came out to the theme from Happy Days, but whatever. I digress.
Well, on that note, we wish you all some happy days here, and hope to see everyone on the 27th. Until next time, we'll see you guys then.